This is Attack of the 20th Century. Thank you for joining us as we explore science fiction, fantasy, and horror films of the 20th century. I'm your host, Jeff.
And I'm your other host, Kim.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 6, where we review our third film in a row from 1982. This one is the Steven Spielberg-produced film, Poltergeist.
Poltergeist.
Look for us on Instagram and Facebook at Attack of the 20th Century. That's 20th. We post our next movie selection there. You can comment, give your thoughts, and they just might make it on the air.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so how has your week been so far?
It has been an interesting week, I will say that.
Really?
Yeah, well, we watched Poltergeist. We split up the watching of Poltergeist because of scheduling.
Actually, we restarted it and watched it with
Well, that's true. Daughter. We did restart it with Nyla. I forgot. Yeah, so anyhow, I felt like I split up my watching, but technically, I watched it twice, right? Or I watched half of it, and then I watched it all over again.
Yeah.
Anyhow, to say all that, you let it slip that this is one of those films I guess people consider cursed.
Yes.
Because so many tragic things happen to a lot of the cast.
Yes, and we'll get into that later. But okay. Yeah, there's this whole thing around Poltergeist about being a cursed film.
Okay, so you had mentioned that when we were about to watch it, or while we were watching it. I don't remember. I know we finished it, I think, was it Monday night?
It was Monday night.
The very next morning, the kids and I had a very tumultuous morning. Mm-hmm. That's our day that we usually meet with our homeschool group on the other side of town. And it was like, if it could go wrong, it went wrong Tuesday morning. I'm not going to say we never oversleep, but this school year, we have not overslept one time. And what you may not know is that I don't own them, but I hold the keys to the building where we meet.
Uh-huh, right.
And I live 30 minutes away from said building. So if we're late, everybody's late getting a start on the school day. So anyhow, started with oversleeping, went to getting pulled over, getting caught by a train, getting caught by the same train a second time. We did finally safely make it to our community day, our school day.
So you got pulled over by a cop, but at least you didn't get a ticket.
I did not get a ticket.
But you got a stern...
Praise God.
Stern message.
I got a talking to. yes. And I was not speeding. So for the listener, I wasn't speeding. I did intend to make a lane change and got honked at because there was someone in my blind spot. So I didn't make the lane change. And the nice officer behind me thought he needed to talk to me about that.
Yes.
Anyhow, and then consequently trapped me behind a train track.
Yeah. It's like we talked about. Sometimes you're just not meant to get somewhere on time.
This is very true.
And that was the case here.
Exactly. It was a crazy morning, and I'm blaming Poltergeist because apparently...
That's fair.
Yeah, it put its bad juju on me Tuesday morning.
They left our house and went with you to...
Yes, hopefully I left it maybe on the train tracks or somewhere. Like, it's gone.
Maybe you passed it on to the cop that gave you a...
Oh, I'm not wishing that on anybody, but no. Maybe I did.
So what have we been watching lately?
Oh, gosh. I don't feel like I've watched much other than Poltergeist because it's like the time of the year where... We always mention crazy schedules, but everybody else out there that has... at least a child in your house that's of the age that they want to do things, you have a crazy schedule too.
Yeah, you're basically an Uber driver.
I am. No, Uber drivers get paid.
Yeah.
I'm just the chauffeur.
Well, you know what? You typically make it back in time for Jeopardy, though.
That is true. And
we just finished an episode of Jeopardy.
We did watch. I did make it home in time to watch Jeopardy tonight. There's about three nights out of the week I can make it home in time to watch Jeopardy. And that is my guilty pleasure of choice.
Yeah.
I would like to be home every night in time to watch Jeopardy because at heart, maybe I'm like 87.
Yeah.
Really? 87-year-old homebody. That's okay. I'm okay with it. I love Jeopardy. I've always loved Jeopardy.
So they've had two hosts they've been alternating.
That's true. Yes.
So one's Ken Jennings, who's he's had the most winnings ever in Jeopardy's life. Right.
The longest winning streak ever.
And the other one's Blossom. What's her name again?
Yeah, Blossom. Mayim Bialik. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. But if you're our age, you know her as Blossom from the sitcom.
Do you have a preference between these two?
I mean, I think I prefer Ken Jennings because of the clout. Like, he owns so much Jeopardy.
He has street
prestige.
Cred.
Exactly. He has street cred. So, and I like his kind of, I don't know, a little bit dry, a little bit quirky humor. Mm-hmm. Blossom's very cheerful, and she brings a good energy, and she's a very smart lady. I think she's done a great job. I just, you know, like, she didn't come out of the Jeopardy stock, I right. guess. So
you'd rather keep it in the family.
I guess so. Mm-hmm. I'm that hardcore of a Jeopardy fan. Like, Ken Jennings has earned his right to be there, right?
So is he your favorite champion? Of course, there was... remember they had that best ever tournament, and they had James Holzhauer and Brad...
Rutger? I think that's his last name.
Yeah. Who's your favorite?
Ken Jennings is definitely my favorite. I like all three of them for different reasons. Holzhauer is just so gutsy, and he's real smarmy and snarky and... you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But he's a very gutsy player. And yeah. So that's not how I would play Jeopardy at all, probably, if given the chance. But there's something to be respected about that.
Oh, yeah.
And Brad seems just kind of like an easygoing, nice guy, friendly. Mm-hmm. I like that. And Ken, he's just crazy smart, knows what he's about, you know?
Well, I'll tell you that me and our oldest son and my brother and a couple friends, we went to see The Batman on opening weekend.
Our Bats? Is that what we're calling him now? Our Bats? He's no longer our Pats.
Yeah. So I put together my own little standouts and setbacks, spoiler free. So if you haven't seen the movie, I'm not telling you anything that's spoilerific.
Okay, good.
So I'll keep this real short because I know you guys want to talk about Poltergeist.
Oh, yeah.
So standout number one, I loved how every shot looked. It looked like it was completely composed, set up perfectly, shot beautifully. It's a gorgeous film. Now, Gotham City isn't a place I would want to live.
Right.
It looks pretty depressing and awful.
Yeah.
But just every shot just looks amazing. So that was standout number one. Number two, Arbats and Zoe. There was definitely some real chemistry going on there.
Oh, yeah. Zoe Kravitz plays...
Catwoman.
Catwoman. Okay.
Yeah. No, so they're really, I think, a good couple.
Okay.
And they just some genuine interaction going on. It was, I don't know. It seemed very real.
Now, I think Pattinson might have some history with hooking up with his coworkers. Yeah. You think there's a real thing going on? I don't keep up with the scuttlebutt enough to know, but
yeah.
I just wonder. She's a beautiful human being.
Yeah. Yeah. They both look gorgeous. I mean, both of them are like great.
And yeah. Then, very good looking people.
The action was amazing. Every time it happened, you were just like, yes. And, you know, you try to, I think you put out of your mind that our Bats is really, I don't know how much he weighs, maybe 180, you know, thin frame dude. And he's just beating everybody up like they're nothing.
Yeah.
But you're able to just something about it. When he puts on that outfit, that's Batman.
Right.
You know, okay. And it just works.
I will say that's probably one of the biggest misgivings I had about him playing Batman was like, he's kind of a pasty white British guy, you know, like he doesn't carry the weight of Batman physically as a human being, but
yeah, he's kind of thin. I mean, he looks good, muscular, trim, but not like beefy. He wasn't like Batfleck.
Oh yeah.
You know,
all these names, it's so hard to keep up with the Batman.
So I'll give another standout to the Riddler, Paul Dano. He isn't what I expected at all. Like when they showed the Riddler, and again, this isn't spoilerific, but it just, he doesn't look like you would think the Riddler would look like.
Interesting. Do I know this actor from anything else?
I didn't know him from anything else. But I know our listeners probably do. I mean, but yeah, he is really good. Like, and he's a guy that kind of blends in with the crowd. There's nothing specific about him because, you know, you have all these other beautiful people in the movie.
Right.
And he's not horrible or anything. He just looks like he would blend in.
Okay.
Like he would be a hard guy to find.
Yeah.
It kind of makes sense, you know?
Right.
And then lastly, and this is kind of a dig at Marvel a bit, it was kind of a refreshing break from Marvel.
Interesting.
You know, we've talked before about like Iron Man, you know, he hits a button and his suit like just like transforms. He's like a transformer.
It's a little bit magical.
Yeah. There's an element of magic and not really science, but they say, oh, it's science.
Right.
You know, he invented this.
Right. He's rich and is a super smart scientist.
Yeah. But when you're watching it, you're kind of like, it's kind of impossible. There's no way that would work.
Right. Right.
So when you watch this, though, you know, you can see where, like, there's something grounded about it.
Plausible. You know, there's plausibility.
There's plausibility, yeah. again, you know, he's a little wiry guy and he's beating up people. And you're like, wow. Like, every time he hits somebody, it's like he's got cement blocks for fists.
Nice.
But the look of it is real. That's a real bat suit. That's okay. Not a digital bat suit.
Right.
You know, everything looks real and organic. Something you That's can reach cool. out and touch. And it's like, it looks great.
It's there. Yeah.
And just a couple quick setbacks. It was a little long, and I've heard the other people mention this too, and I don't mind a really long movie, you know?
Yeah, but it was like 3 hours, wasn't it?
3 hours, 5 minutes.
Woo!
It, for what it was, they spent a lot of time. I think they could have trimmed some, is okay. what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
They could have trimmed some.
And I'm taking at least 2 bathroom breaks in a 3-hour and 5-minute movie. I did.
That's
and plus, a long time.
We got there early. So you're watching the preview stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And then the previews were literally 30 minutes.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you guys were gone a long time that afternoon.
Yeah.
Afternoon into evening.
So, yeah, I felt part of that chair, you know?
Right.
Like you just kind of, because you spent half your day in that chair.
Literally, yeah.
So, it was a little long. It could have been trimmed up a bit. And then, you know, I've mentioned this before, some movies have great repeat viewing value.
Right.
I would say like the Spider-Man movie.
Right.
I watched, I could see that. I could have watched that again the next day. This is one, like I watched it and I'm not going to be ready to watch it again in a while.
Okay. Do you think you'll ever watch it again?
I could watch it again, yeah.
Because I remember after you saw the newest Joker movie, you were like, nope, I saw it one time and one time is enough.
Yeah, that's still how I feel about Joker. Like, but I've mentioned before, the Joker is in a movie class by itself.
Right, okay. So this isn't that.
This isn't that.
It's not that
The
dark.
Joker, I think, messed with my head, like, psychologically.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
When you watch the Joker, you come out of there, and my brother mentioned the same thing. He came out just feeling, like, detached from reality a little bit.
That's weird.
Yeah. There's something there. I think a whole study could be done on the Joker.
Sure.
And what it does to the human brain.
Yeah.
Which this movie wasn't like that though. It was
well, that's good.
It was dark, but it wasn't like, you know, crazy dark.
Mind altering dark.
Yeah. I came good. Out and I was like, that was a really good movie.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Today, we are discussing 1982's Poltergeist. This is a PG-rated film, but we're going to talk about that a little later. I feel like it probably deserved some stricter warnings, potentially. But basically, what happens in 1982's Poltergeist, we have the Freeling family. Seemed like a normal, average family. Dad's working for a development company. But some strange stuff starts happening in their house. We've got dad is Steve, played by Craig T. Nelson. We've got mom, Diane. There's a teenage daughter, Dana, an 8-year-old son, Robbie, and 5-year-old Carol Ann. And we start having some ghost-like encounters in their home, which maybe seem, I wouldn't necessarily say friendly, but at least quirky and playful in the beginning.
Yeah, harmless.
Harmless. And then they turn south pretty quick.
Yes.
And things get scary. To the point where a tree outside the window tries to eat Robbie.
Yeah.
They rescue Robbie, but Carol Ann, the 5-year-old, gets sucked into...
The closet.
The closet, but not the closet. She goes into the closet, but then it's a portal to somewhere else.
Yeah.
So the family ends up having to bring in a parapsychologist, I think is what they called her, and an exorcist eventually to sort out the problems with their home and its uninvited guest.
Yes.
And just a reminder, this is not a spoiler-free zone. So if you haven't seen Poltergeist, hit pause now and join us later after you watch the movie.
All right. So you had just seen this movie this week. It's the first time you've seen it.
Yeah, this weekend into Monday. Started it over the weekend, finished it on Monday.
Yeah, this is my second and a half because we established we've watched it 1.5 times.
why is that bothering us so much? Apparently that unsettles us.
Mathematically, I think it was exactly a half. We watched it.
It feels like it, yeah.
Then we had to stop. And then the next day, our daughter sat down and wanted to watch it. So we started from the beginning.
We did start from the beginning.
And watched the whole thing.
Yep.
So yeah, about 10 years ago is when I first saw this film. And it was one of those things where I was just watching TV and it just came on and I was just like, I got sucked in and I watched it.
Where was I?
I don't know. Who knows?
Probably asleep with sleeping babies, because we would have had babies at that time.
But I watched it and I remember liking it. Like, this is pretty cool. And then when we were trying to figure out what to watch, you and I have done two movies from 1982 the last 2 weeks.
We have.
And I was looking at something like 1982 and how much each film had made that year. And this one had, it was actually number 8 on the list for 1982.
For money making?
For money making. So okay. Yeah. So just real quick on that, budget was 10.7 mil and it made 121
mil. Wow.
Which is really cool. Of course, nobody really remembers it in 1982 compared to E.T. because E.T. was also a Spielberg film that made mega bucks and kind of like, it kind of like topped. Like, it was number one for a long time.
Very long time. Spielberg was making bank in 1982.
Yeah. Yeah. He was hot stuff.
Wow.
He was hot stuff. So just a bit of trivia. Poltergeist is German for noisy ghost.
Oh, okay.
And we watched a little bit. There's actually, you know, you never know if it's real or not. But there's people on YouTube that show, like, their kitchen acting weird. Like, drawers opening and closing, cabinets opening and closing.
Yeah, mugs flying out of the cabinet or whatever. I don't know. I feel very much like, if you're an Office fan, Jim versus Pam in the scenario. Where I see that and I'm like, meh, tricks. It's all tricks. Right. I don't believe in ghosts. That's hogwash.
Yeah.
You remember that episode where... Yeah. Pam clearly believes in ghosts, and Jim's like, my wife cannot, like, what? No. My wife certainly does not believe in ghosts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the Jim in this scenario.
Right.
Yeah, whatever. You can put whatever you want on YouTube.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, if it's real, then why are you still staying in that house?
Yeah, very good point. And that was my question through this whole movie. They put up with a lot of weird stuff before they were finally like, okay, we're pulling the plug. We're going. We're not staying here.
I think that's a problem with a haunted house film in general. Like, I think that's like a crucial
problem
with a haunted house. Yeah, why do you stay? Why don't you just get in a car and drive away?
Yeah.
But what was good about this one is their daughter got stolen from them, and that's why they stay.
That's a weird way to phrase that. That was good that their daughter got stolen. It was actually terrible, but it did give them a reason to stay in the house because they wanted to get their daughter back from the house.
We need a movie plot. And so that's why the little girl had to get stolen.
Yes. Okay.
And it's similar. We reviewed House last year.
Last season, yeah.
And it was the same thing, right? His kid was kidnapped by the house.
He hated this house. This house hated him, but he stayed because he really felt very strongly that the house had something to do with the disappearance of his son.
Right.
So yeah, this is a very similar scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. So we mentioned earlier the curse around Poltergeist. This is really dark and kind of depressing stuff.
It's sad. It's sad.
But I'll just breeze through it because we don't want to depress you too much. But Dominique Dunn, who plays the eldest daughter, Dana Freeling, in this movie, in 1982, the year that this film was released, she was actually strangled to death by her ex-boyfriend, who was abusive and... Obviously, there was some demented stuff going on there.
Well, that's not good.
So that was the first person to die. There's a guy named Julian Beck. He's in Poltergeist 2. He died in 1985 after a long battle with stomach cancer. But then, of course, the little girl, Heather O'Rourke, who plays Carol Ann.
The adorable little blonde.
She died at age 12 from cardiac arrest caused by septic shock. Yeah, so... Very depressing. And then I mentioned even that guy that was like outside their home and reaching into the kitchen and eating food off their counter.
I have so many beefs with that guy.
He was actually murdered by somebody. I don't know all the details, but it was basically an axe murder from a potential thief or something like that.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Like, really grisly, awful murder.
Okay, so in an effort to protect the vibe of the podcast,
yeah,
can I just bring a little levity and say, okay, my Tuesday morning doesn't seem quite as bad.
Yeah. Your poltergeist pales in comparison to this.
Yeah, whatever poltergeist curse juju I picked up Tuesday morning was is nothing compared to this.
So also, in the Oscars that year, Poltergeist was nominated for special effects and the score.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we don't talk about this too much, but, Jerry Goldsmith did the score for this one. Okay. Typically, John Williams does Steven Spielberg's scores.
Right.
And then also Tobe Hooper was the director of this film, probably best known for Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Okay. Something I've never seen, but okay.
You know, there's this controversy, you know, how much he did, how much Spielberg did. I don't think we really know enough for you and I to comment.
Yeah.
I will say Spielberg had his fingerprints all over this movie because he was a co-writer and the producer of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks kind of Spielberg-esque.
It feels very Spielberg-esque. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So let's just say, you know, Spielberg was the boss. He was the producer. Right. And the co-writer and Hooper, you know, maybe whatever he did was amazing because, you know, they put together something that has been a film that has spawned several sequels and even a remake in 2015, I think you said.
Right. Yeah, I just saw that there's a remake in 2015, which probably would scare the bejeebus out of me. So I'm probably not going to be watching that, but, you know, I might go read some reviews about it. So you mentioned the first time you saw this was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
We were clearly already adults.
Yeah.
Why did you not see this as a kid? Because you watched a lot of movies as a kid.
Yeah, it's weird because certain films like this, and even you mentioned Texas Chainsaw Massacre, there's ones that just like I didn't encounter. Like,
yeah, we're not on your radar. I didn't watch this. I knew of Poltergeist, and I wonder, I need to ask my parents if they had seen Poltergeist, because I know, like, everybody can quote the whole, they're here, right? Yeah. The little blonde girl says, and I know my parents were aware of it, and I've heard them quote this movie before, but it was never on my radar as a kid. I was never into truly scary movies anyhow. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it was just something that my parents were like, nobody needs to see this in our house, or nobody under the age of, I don't know, 18 needs to see this in our house or something. But I never saw it, never watched it.
Yeah. One thing you and I talked about initially, right after, or actually while we were watching the movie, we were like, wow, Stranger Things borrowed a lot from this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And we haven't even seen the whole Stranger Things catalog, but what we've seen of it, you can still see the fingerprints of this movie on Stranger Things, I think.
When we watched Stranger Things, especially the first season, we were like, oh yeah, they love John Carpenter and they love Spielberg. Just how, like, there's some Close Encounters influence going on and definitely lots of John Carpenter, especially musically. And just the general vibe, but some E.T. stuff going on. But then I'm watching Poltergeist. I'm like, wow, they borrowed a lot. I mean, you know, even just the kid going missing, them trying to communicate with the child in the home.
Exactly. Mom's trying to use the TV or whatever to contact the daughter. Like Winona Ryder does with the Christmas lights and the alphabet and... Yeah.
Yeah, all of that was like super reminiscent.
It's very influential, clearly.
Mm-hmm. So why don't we just jump right into standouts and setbacks?
Okay.
So standouts, I'll start us out. And normally we don't do this. Normally we go through the cast later. You know, we'll call out one or two cast members and call them standouts. But I'm going to just give a standout to the whole cast.
I'm cool with that.
It's our podcast. We can do what we want, dang it.
That's right.
Well, so the whole cast, I felt like they were perfectly cast for this film.
Yes.
And we can just kind of run through them one at a time. But Jo Beth Williams plays Diane Freeling, the mama, and she's probably our biggest protagonist of this film, right?
Yeah, I would say she's kind of the central character, really.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like she does a great job. Like, she's extremely believable as a mom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you feel like there's this real sense of love and heroism from somebody that, like, is just an everyday person.
Right, right. Well, let me backtrack a little. She and the little blonde daughter are definitely the central piece.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Craig T. Nelson's character, the dad, Stephen.
Mm.
He's kind of like he's almost as influential as they are.
Yeah, yeah. And I think because part of it's circumstantial, he's out at work.
Right.
Mom and daughter are home and figuring out their house is haunted. And so they're like conveying this stuff to him.
Exactly.
And he's trying to just keep up, basically.
Yeah.
And it feels like that's a lot of his role is he's trying to keep up because he's trying to figure out the situation. And then, of course, his daughter goes missing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he obviously plays a big role in saving his son from the tree, you know, that tries to grab him. But then, you know, then he's trying to play catch up with the exorcist lady.
He is. Well, and, you know, I mean, I think he does a really good job of being that, especially from an 80s movie, like dad that goes to work. and then comes home and realizes like life is falling apart.
Yeah.
Like he just plays that so perfectly because he also realizes like it's not just like, oh, we're in a haunted house and things are weird here. It's mm-hmm. tied to his career.
Yeah.
This house, this housing development, mm-hmm. The choices his boss has made to put these houses where they are. All of that is wrapped up in this, you know, haunting of their house. So mm-hmm. it really, I think he does a great job of playing this, like, wow, I had no idea. Like, just lost in the woods kind of character. Like,
yeah.
everything hits him all at once. And he's like, I mean, he looks stunned
yeah.
through half of the movie. He's yeah. just like, what? My whole life is upside down now. Yeah. What?
Yeah. And it's understated too, because he's got dark circles under his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
He clearly hasn't been sleeping since mm-hmm. his daughter got, stolen.
Yeah, it's visible in him, like how he changes through the movie, how uh-huh. much more depressed he becomes throughout yeah. the movie.
And I love that he doesn't talk about it. Like, I haven't slept in days.
Right.
That's why I look the way I do. Like, they don't, because I feel like in a modern movie, they feel like they have to explain
everything.
Talk about
your feelings.
Yeah. But you just look like a picture's worth 1,000 words, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you look at his face and it's like, oh, this guy's not doing so great with his whole
exactly.
thing.
There's a physical, visible change in him throughout the movie.
And then as far as the other actors, Heather O'Rourke, who plays the little girl, dynamite. Every scene she's in, she's just dynamite.
Well, she's adorable and that helps. I mean, she's yeah. just this perfect little blonde-haired, blue-eyed thing. But she really nails it. Like, I don't know what kind of acting classes they were given these tiny kids, but mm-hmm. man, she's spot on. Everything,
yeah.
like her interactions with her parents and just the way she interacts with the ghost inside the TV. Or we don't even, it just looks like snow on the TV, which, by the way, we had to teach our child what that means. Like, she's never seen a TV with snow on it, you know,
yeah.
where all of the shows have gone off and it's just, I don't know, snow. That's what yeah. we called it,
yeah,
right?
That's what we call, yeah, just that static look.
Yeah, static, I guess is what it is. But she had never seen that before. So anyhow, like the little girl just interacting with a blank screen,
mm-hmm.
like she's talking to someone. Clearly someone is communicating with her,
right.
you know?
It's fantastic.
And she does a really great job.
Yeah, yeah. I was watching her do that, and she was only like 5 or something. She was crazy young.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, how are they doing that? And I would just wonder if they were... She was reading something and
yeah.
she was answering the TV.
Maybe, or there was another human there on the set, you know, interacting with her. But
yeah.
the way they filmed it, we see the TV.
Right.
Who knows? Who knows? She did a great job.
I don't know. A lot of times child actors kind of like, I don't really want to see them. Like, they're stale or whatever, you know. Like,
or sometimes they're adorable.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But in this one, all 3 kids were just dynamite.
They really are. They make the movie. The kids do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The older daughter, she has a cool scene where like these, pool construction workers are kind of like doing cat calls and
yeah,
calling out to her, kind of
really
being skeevy.
Being
you know?
Inappropriate with the teenage daughter. Yeah.
And she plays it cool, you know, and then
flicks them off.
Flicks
yeah.
them off. And then the son, of course, he did a great job too. I felt
he
like
he did. I always felt bad for him though. Like, he's such the typical middle child through the whole movie.
Yeah.
They're always like forgetting about him.
Yeah.
Poor guy. I mean, they did rescue him from the tree. They didn't let the tree eat him.
Yeah.
Dad came out and saved him. But from that point, that was like the only time. Even there's a scene later on where like it's really, they're really in bad shape and they've got to call in the exorcist, right?
Right.
So you see the little boy, I mean, he's like 8 years old.
Yeah.
He's walking down the steps of their front lawn into a taxi. And the only person that even approaches the taxi with him is the family dog. And thank goodness the family dog jumps in and gets in the taxi with him, because mom and dad are standing up near the front door, like sad, kind of waving. They don't even really say goodbye.
Yeah.
He kind of looks at them like, well, this might be the last time I ever see you guys. Gets in a taxi by himself at 8 years old. And
yeah.
We don't know where he went. Rides off into the sunset.
They're like, good luck.
I mean, I guess we could say, okay, they were protecting their child. They had to send him away from this possessed house so they could
yeah.
rescue the other sister. You know, whatever, but it just seems so middle child like.
It did.
Right? Like, you're going to fend for yourself, buddy. Sorry.
Good luck, kid. And speaking of a great cast, even that you mentioned the dog did a great job acting in this film.
The dog was good.
The dog was interacting with the wall, you know, getting up on the bed as if that's a human right there.
Yeah, like he could see something was happening inside the wall or something. There was a presence, I don't know.
I'm like, how the heck did they train that dog to do that?
I don't know. The dog, the dog was very typical dog. The very, like, the opening scene of the movie, everybody's waking up, I think on a Saturday or something. Yeah. And the dog, like, I think he's in the teenage daughter's bedroom. Uh-huh. She, like, rolls over and there's a half-eaten bag of chips on her bed, like, kind of under her pillow. And he snags it, slides it across the bed. Chips are going everywhere. Yeah. But he manages to get a few chips on the floor and helps himself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a great, like, 80s movie family kind of scene, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like it's very typical.
It was typical 80s, like, yeah. It wouldn't happen in our house, but it happened.
No, it could totally happen in our house. Well, not a dog, but a cat.
Yeah. Well, yeah, everybody. And then they brought in this team of what do you call them, parapsychologists?
Yeah, I think that's what they were.
They were great. I mean, they were great at just conveying, like, we're interested in, you know, the paranormal. Mm-hmm. But you could tell they hadn't really seen anything real.
Yeah, it was like they wanted to see these things.
They wanted it so bad.
Had this great comedic part where the was it the black parapsychologist guy? He's like, you got to see this video footage I have. This, was it a car or something?
Yeah, a little kid's car drove, like,
moved across the floor over 7 hours. It's 7 hours of footage, and it finally went from one side of the living room to the other. And I'm like, these people have, like, dining room chairs.
Well, then the dad opens
the
door and shows them. That was, like, the very next scene. Like, well, here, let me show you this.
Everything in the kid's room is spinning out of control, like, levitating. Spinning around like it's a planet on an axis or something.
Yeah, little mini tornadoes happening in that room.
Yeah, exactly.
And their eyes are just, like, bulging out of their head.
I love the look of, like, the lead, the older lady with the strawberry blonde hair.
Yeah.
She's, like, the lead parapsychologist, maybe.
Mm.
And she's, like, she reminds me of Professor Trelawney from Harry Potter.
Uh-huh.
She's got those crazy big glasses and these huge, I would say blue, I think they were blue or a lighter color eye.
Uh-huh.
And it just lends so much quirkiness to her character. And, like, mm-hmm. she just fits the part of, like, I don't know. I don't know what a parapsychologist is supposed to look like.
Right.
But she definitely, like, she's the whole package.
Yeah.
Right? You look at
her
and you think.
She's guiding them through the situation. And it's a situation she's never been in before.
Right. She's wanted to be in. These are things she's been researching.
Right.
And now it's, like, finally happening. And her eyes get, like, bigger and bigger and bigger every time something new happens.
So she sticks around. The guy you mentioned sticks around.
Right.
There's another guy, though, and it doesn't bother me that he wouldn't stick around.
No, he's done. He gets bit. Like, it looks like a shark bit him.
Well, that's not the worst of it. Like, that he's the one that he has, like, this.
That's right.
I don't know what it is, but basically the ghosts are playing tricks with his mind, and he looks like he's tearing his skin off his face.
Yeah, he sees himself in the mirror. At first, it looks like there's just a crack, like, along his cheekbone, right?
Yeah.
And then he starts pulling. That was probably my least favorite part of the gore. You know, I'm not a horror fan.
You're not a gore fan.
I'm not a gore fan. Oh, and we have a cat letting herself into this room. Hi, cat. Thanks for joining us. Anyhow, do you have something to say? No. Anyhow, so he's, like, looking in this mirror, and his face gets more and more, like, cracked, grotesque looking, and he starts pulling it apart. Like, it's so gruesome.
And chunks of face are falling into the sink.
Yeah, in full honesty, I turned away. I didn't watch the rest of that.
You didn't, like, that was your least favorite. I could tell that was your least favorite part.
No, I'm not into that sort of grossness.
But guess what? That was his least favorite part, too, because he decided not to stick around.
Yeah, he's like, I'm done. I don't really like this parapsychology gig. Anyhow... I'm good. Peace out.
It probably isn't a high-paying gig either.
I would imagine not. No. I mean, it's like the Ghostbusters, right? They weren't making a lot of money.
So we kind of just zipped through the whole cast, but even the guy that I guess would be our bad guy, if you don't count the beast and all that, is
right.
He's the real estate. I don't know if he owns the real estate company
I'd
that's
say
doing
he's
this.
He's the developer, right? Like, yeah. Or at least the sales
boss.
He's
the boss anyway. Yeah, right. He's basically Craig T. Nelson's boss in mm-hmm. this. And you get the impression that he knows what they've done. And, of course, what they've done is they built on top of a graveyard and they moved the headstones. but they didn't move the actual bodies.
Exactly.
And that's why we have a poltergeist going on
and
here.
And we don't find that out until, I don't know, 3/4 of the way through the movie.
Yeah.
Really.
No, I mean, really, it's in the last 20 minutes, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, right? It's towards the very end. Finally, we get some explanation. Like, why this house? Why is this happening?
Yeah. We get a good clue about halfway through.
Right.
When they's like, hey, we're going to build another site up here. And, you know, there's like, well, there's, you know, graveyard
here.
There
was a cemetery right there.
Cemetery.
I mean, you could see it. Yeah.
They're like, oh, no, we'll move the bodies. You know, we'll move all of this.
He's like, don't worry. We'll clear all this cemetery out of here. We're going to put some prime real estate right here. It's like a hilltop. You're overlooking the valley. He's promising Craig T. Nelson's character, like, the premium spot because he's, like, their top sales guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then Craig T. Nelson's, I think his wheels started turning at that point. He's like, but you're going to just move a whole cemetery to build houses? Well, we find out later. They just moved the headstones. They didn't move the bodies. And that's why we're having the problems.
Right, right. The cast, the whole cast gets a standout.
Yeah. So to piggyback on, you know, the cast being a standout, mm-hmm. I did really enjoy the couple aspect between Stephen and Diane. So mm-hmm. Craig T. Nelson and what's her name? Jo Beth Williams. I feel like there was like true, like they really seem like a couple. They really seem like a family.
Mm-hmm.
They're parenting and they're, you know, just time together. I think there was a, you know, they like to enjoy the ganja together we saw in there. But they, I don't know, it just seemed real. Like it didn't seem
manufactured.
Fake or put on, manufactured. Yeah. No, it was very believable.
Yeah. I liked that they'd been around a long time mm-hmm. together, but they weren't sick of each other.
No.
I think you and I talked about an earlier episode of this podcast where we're like, the representation of marriage,
mm-hmm.
not being tired and just like couples just not liking each other. And I think around horror, there's a lot of that where,
you know,
people just sick of each other. And so,
like, everything is wrong in a horror movie normally, where this seems like a perfectly congenial, happy family. You know, like, I'm sure they have their ups and downs. They have a teenage daughter, they have an 8-year-old son, they have a 5-year-old daughter. They've seen some things together, I'm sure, but they're still doing life.
They're doing life together. And even I did like that no matter what the situations were that were occurring around them and how crazy things were, they really supported each other.
Yeah.
And they were like a good tag team.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? And one of my favorite parts was when Diane went and grabbed him and said, hey, you know, Steve, like, just watch this. You have to watch this.
Yeah, it's when she's first discovering the weird things happening in the house, right?
Exactly. And she says, this is the line, now reach back into our past when you used to have an open mind. Remember that? Just try to use that for the next couple of minutes.
It's but like a recognition that we've kind of gotten a little old and stodgy and stuck in our ways.
Yeah, yeah.
But we used to be cool, open-minded people. So.
Right.
Let's go there for a second.
But it wasn't stated like we're going to get a divorce, we hate each other, and now I'm throwing out these lines because that line could have worked in that situation.
Right.
And I guess because there's so many movies and shows that just like depict like couples crumbling and all that.
Right.
And it's like, no, they're a happy couple. They love each other.
Right.
But she does recognize that, they've gotten older together. We've changed.
Sure.
And, you know, he's not open-minded anymore. He kind of knows what's going on, and that's that.
Right, right.
But she's about to show him something that's going to blow his mind. I'm going to put my kid on the floor of the kitchen.
Yeah.
And she's going to go soaring down, you know.
Sliding across the 10 tile. Feet
exactly.
To the next spot,
And two, like, to your point, they were, when they went to the neighbors, and they were just, they were so cute, acting silly, like giggly, trying to talk to the neighbors. And, you know, Steve was like, look, something's going on next door, something. Diane's like, we were wondering if maybe you had any, you know, if you experienced disturbances. And the dude was like, what kind of disturbances? And she's like, oh, you know, like dishes or furniture moving by themselves, you know.
Right.
And they were just like, and I don't know if they had, you know, a little bit of ganja or what, like if they'd smoked a little bit. But they were just so silly and funny. And, like, I don't know. There was something going on between the two. It felt very real and organic.
I think they were having to wrestle with, like, do we sound like idiots right now? And to a neighbor who they do not get along with. Like something about the neighbor's remote is the same as their remote in their house. So we saw that earlier in the film where, you know, Steve has got his buddies over there trying to watch the game and the neighbor's kid wants to watch Mr. Rogers and it's messing with his TV. Like every time the neighbor changes the channel, it changes his channel.
Yeah.
And so there's constantly, we know from this early on, there's conflict, there's tension between them and the neighbor. Well, now things are getting real weird. And so they're having to go to the neighbor and say, you guys noticing this too? Anything weird happening in your house? And there's also this added strange element of like, they're standing on the neighbor's front doorstep swatting mosquitoes. Like they're clearly being eaten alive by mosquitoes. And the neighbor is unaffected.
Yeah.
Like he's like, no, never been eaten, bit by a mosquito in my life. You know, they're
obviously dropping a hint. Like, can you let us into your house? And he's like, nope, you're not coming in here.
Yeah, the neighbor's like,
and that's the subtext going on.
His punk little kid shows up too, and they're just like, nah, I don't know, fine, whatever.
In fact, I've never been bitten by a mosquito here.
Yeah, that's just a whole weird, but but somehow very truthful exchange.
Yeah,
you know,
agreed. But yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Their dynamic, I really loved how they interacted. Yeah, and I'll go another standout is the filmography. It felt very Spielberg-esque in that and how it looked. So it reminded me a lot of Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Okay.
Where these characters, a lot of times, are looking up in bewilderment. They're looking at something, some sort of spectral, you know, scene going on.
Right.
And they're looking up, and this light is shining in their face, and it's playing music that kind of is like an awe-inspiring moment.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it just, it looked like so much of the period Spielberg-esque. He had his own look and feel going on. So I can kind of see why people felt like, oh, this looks like a Spielberg movie. But you know, I wonder, again, I don't want to get into all that, but essentially I just loved the look. I loved the way it looked, the way the characters reacted to certain situations. The music, like all of it just kind of played together in concert.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. Something else they did in this movie that I thought was pretty interesting is there's like a fake ending. They tricked us.
Yes.
You think, you know, the parapsychologist, the exorcist come, they rescue the daughter, everything's good, they're going to move, they're getting out of here. You know, you feel like all the bad things have been banished and you're done. And the movie's not over.
Yeah.
Like the evil spirits make one last play for everything.
Right.
You know, and it goes sideways real quick.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really interesting. That made me think of M. Night Shyamalan, and I've brought him up in other podcasts because I have very little experience with the horror or thriller world, right?
Right, right.
M. Night Shyamalan is somebody who I have watched.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if he was inspired by Spielberg in this kind of false ending, because he likes to do that. He likes to pull a little switch ending in his movies a lot of times, right? So I wonder if this Spielberg ending, like maybe he saw Poltergeist as a kid and, you know, I'm always looking for like this inside connection of like who was inspired by what, right?
Right.
But it was very fascinating that you think the movie's wrapping up. You feel like, well, okay, this is the end.
They save the daughter.
Yeah.
She comes out of the ceiling. And that's the whole point is like, we want to get our daughter back. And they got her back.
They got her back.
So you think like we're wrapping up this movie.
Nope.
That wasn't the case.
That was not the case. No. And of course, it's when dad has to go back to the office to wrap up the last few things before they're going to like say goodbye to this house, hit the road, get out of town, move to a new place. And while dad's gone, everything goes sideways.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, wait, I thought the movie was over, but no, I thought we had our happy ending. And
No, I love that too. It was a good psych out moment. And you're like, okay, I think we're done. And like, oh, wait a minute. This movie's still going. And then the next thing you know, Mrs. Freeling is like going up on the ceiling and on the walls in her underwear, trying to figure out like, what the heck's going on?
And you knew there were some giveaways before things really went sideways. There's like this tension building. You know things are not finished pretty soon.
Yeah.
But it takes a while. Like he lets there, I don't know if it's Spielberg or the other guy that lets there be this buildup. So you're waiting. Like I was starting to cringe and like hold a blanket in front of my face. I'm like, I'm waiting for a jump scare because I can just tell like the tension is building.
Right.
And then whammo, you know, like the kid's bedroom, starts doing the clown that the son, the middle son has in his room.
Yeah.
You know that thing's bad from the beginning of the movie. And
right.
finally it shows its true colors, right?
Right.
Nobody leaves a clown in their kids' bedrooms anymore.
Yeah, no
Which
way.
Our daughter was very shocked when I revealed that. Actually, I had clown wallpaper on my bedroom walls as a kid. It was very traumatic when my uncle let me watch It.
Yeah. After the 80s, I think clowns were out.
Clowns are out. Nobody has any tolerance for clowns anymore. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the clown goes bad. The little kids, clearly there's screaming happening in their room that they share. Yeah. Mom had been, you know, luxuriating in the bathtub. She wanted to dye her hair because she's developed gray hair from this whole traumatic thing, right?
Yeah.
And there was just that buildup of like, she's quietly soaking in the tub. She's fixing her hair. She's blow drying her hair. She's oblivious to whatever else is going on in the house. And you're like, this, you got to pay attention, lady. You got to put down that blow dryer.
Yeah.
Things are going sideways right now. And they do big time. She gets... Yeah. Like you said, thrown up the wall. She like goes up the ceiling.
Right.
She's in like her nightdress and her undies. And
uh-huh.
Yeah, that was a big fake out. It
yeah.
got me.
Yeah, that whole scene was really cool too. When she's trying to run down the hallway and the hallway suddenly becomes super long.
Oh, yeah.
That was like a really cool camera trick right there.
It was. And it totally made me think of The Shining. Don't we have some long hallway shots like that in The Shining?
Yeah, yeah.
One of the very few horror films I've actually seen in my life.
Well, this podcast has helped open your eyes to some.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah, you know, you touched on something. There was a lot of really memorable scenes in this. And I think there are scenes that stick with you.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously there's the classic, the kid staring at the, you know, the TV screen and saying, they're here.
Right. Little Carol Ann.
Yeah, that's a classic.
I'm 43 years old, just saw this movie for the first time this week. And I know that quote from this movie because everybody knows that quote from this movie, right? Like this is one of those movies that has stayed in, I don't know, you know, just kind of out there influencing other movies for decades, literally decades now.
Yeah, and probably one of my favorite scenes in the whole film is the little girl. What's her name again?
Carol Ann.
Carol Ann. She's sitting up on the kitchen counter, and then mom comes over and is talking to her. And, you know, she basically chastises her kid for, you know, the chairs coming out from the table and then playing. So she sets all the chairs back to the table.
She thought nobody in the house was pushing the chairs in. You know, kids get up, they leave breakfast, nobody pushes their chair back in. So she's fussing. She's doing a mom thing. She's fussing like, nobody pushes in the chairs around here.
And so all in one shot. So you see the chairs, her pushing them back under the table. She goes around to the kitchen, gets something out from under the kitchen counter or whatever, comes back, and it's like this ding. All the chairs are stacked up in this elaborate formation on top of the table.
Yeah, they're like in a pyramid on top of the table now. They're not just pushed in, they're like a sculpture now.
And what's really great, it's like all one shot. You're like, where did they cut that? How did they do this shot?
Right.
And, you know, they do this, and then the mom looks at the daughter, and she's like, is it the TV people? She's like, yeah.
No, the daughter says,
Yeah, that's right. She says, And they had this whole exchange. And I loved the exchange between her and the daughter. I loved the moment, the kind of that freak out. I think that was like it wasn't spooky. Like, I'm not going to be able to sleep at night spooky. But it was like, wow. You know, these ghosts are real. They just did something right now.
I don't even think in her mind at that point, ghost was an option. It was like some sort of energy or some sort of like, something weird is happening in this house. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it was just very like this amazement. Like, what is happening?
Yeah. Extremely memorable moment in the film. And then you mentioned the clown already. The clown, just looking at the clown was freaky. And then obviously, you know, when the clown like comes out and starts trying to strangle the kid.
Right.
I will give props to the kid. The kid defeats the clown.
He does, yes.
And like starts tearing out some of the stuffing from
the
clown.
Way to go, Robbie.
Yeah. you know, the scene where the tree reaches in and grabs the kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I will say before that happens, the tree was kind of a character on its own.
Oh, it really was, yeah.
You're like, yeah, why would you have this tree?
It was a very interesting looking tree, like not a healthy looking tree. I'm thinking if you're building a brand new house in a brand new neighborhood, this tree probably wouldn't have stayed, right?
Yeah.
But Steven's character, the dad's character, says early on in the movie, Like, he's putting the kids to bed. They see the tree outside. And he says something about, I built the house next to this tree on purpose. Like, this tree is 100 years old. It's protecting the house, you know, whatever. Yeah. And you can just tell the kid's kind of like, I don't know. That tree kind of freaks me out. Like, and I'm the whole beginning part of the movie, I'm like, shut the curtains.
Yeah, just shut the curtains.
Shut the curtains. The kids are trying to fall asleep. There's this menacing looking tree right outside their window. There's a lightning storm, which is flashing weird shadows. Like, shut the curtains already.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, I'll get us started on setbacks. I don't have too many setbacks because, you know, I clearly like the film. But, you know, anytime you look at a film, you could always pick it apart.
Sure.
It doesn't make complete sense, right?
Right.
So the dead people have been in limbo for a long time. Right. So there's this light that they're supposed to go towards to move into the afterlife. So that was kind of established by the whole medium lady. And we called her exorcist. I don't know if she's really an exorcist. I don't know what you would call her. Yeah,
like a medium.
Medium, yeah.
Right.
So the beast, she establishes, and this is really a creepy moment when she explains how the beast is kind of taking a child's form and speaking in a way that only a child would understand.
Yeah, that was creepy.
It's like, oh, that's so creepy that Carol Ann is palling up with like pretty much the devil here.
Yeah, that's
and she the doesn't way it's know
described.
It.
Right, exactly. He is deceiving her, which, I mean, it's father of lies. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. It's definitely, like, creepy, creepy stuff. So, but it makes sense that she is being used by the beast to keep these dead people from going towards the light. But it just opens up so many questions. You know, why didn't they go towards the light before they got Carol Ann?
Right, exactly.
You know, they built this home on top of these dead bodies, graves. You know, like, what were they doing when they were putting up the framing of the house and the drywall?
Right.
You know, what's happening to those dead bodies? Or not the dead bodies, but like their spirits.
Right.
Why aren't they going towards that light during that time?
Exactly. Well, and how come this is the only house that's seemingly affected?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's a big house, but it's not that big of a house. It's not a cemetery-sized house. Like, so other houses, and there's a huge development here, a huge subdivision. Mm-hmm. Other houses are clearly also on the cemetery.
Yeah.
Why is it just Craig T. Nelson's house that's afflicted?
That part doesn't make sense. So, again, like, you always say questions. Like it brings up questions. Like, you know, how come the beast can't harm anybody? Do you realize the only person who died in this whole movie is that little birdie that they bury at the beginning?
Oh, her little pet. I don't know. I'm going to say parakeet, but I don't know my bird breeds, but some little cute Tweety bird.
Yeah. So, you know, that tree goes and grabs the kid. Why didn't it just like snap his neck right there?
Oh, that's gruesome.
Yeah.
Because it's a Spielberg movie.
But it could have done it. You know, the devil doesn't care if it's Spielberg, you know?
Right. This is very true, but I'm glad that they did not.
Maybe they didn't want a dead kid. Maybe they wanted another kid to be in the whole limbo situation. So why didn't the tree grab the kid and throw him into the closet?
That's true. Yeah.
So there's just questions like, what can the beast really do that's like in the natural world?
Right.
You know, if it can open and close drawers and stuff, why can't it just like pick them up, these people, and like throw them all in the closet?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Bring them all into his world.
I don't know.
So, you know, it's more of just questions, not really, like you've always said, there's questions, not really setbacks.
Right. I don't think I'd put that together. No one actually dies in this movie. Not even the, like, physical bad guy, which would be the boss that made the decision to not properly move this burial ground or the cemetery.
Uh-huh.
Nobody dies? That's interesting. Except for this little bird at the beginning of the movie that I guess was kind of foreshadowing because that was still in the happy times in the movie. Like, the mom finds the little dead bird and she's like, oh man, couldn't this have happened on a school day? Now, and Carol Ann bust her. She was, I will say, here's a question for you. She was going to flush this bird down the toilet. Like, what kind of septic system do they have in this subdivision?
That's a horrible idea.
That's a terrible idea. You're going to have some serious plumbing problems, lady. Don't flush a bird down the toilet.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I digress. But yeah, it is interesting to me that no one actually dies in the movie.
Yeah.
Except for the bird.
Any other setbacks you want to call out?
Again, you know, this is me, like, I'm not necessarily saying it's a setback because maybe I just don't understand something because this is not my area of expertise, but I do have questions.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Jo Beth, Diane, the mom character, like, she was fabulous. Her work, her juxtaposition with Craig T. Nelson, like, she really did a good job, except sometimes her facial expressions threw me off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I don't understand, like, you love the scene where she realizes these chairs are stacked up and there's this weird energy in the house and Carol Ann can slide across the floor, or she can slide across the floor because some energy is pulling them.
Yeah.
She's very excited about that stuff. Like, when Steven comes home from work and she's like, okay, you know, mm-hmm. remember when we used to be open-minded? Check this out, this weird stuff. Like, she seems genuinely excited about it. And I just don't think I would be in that position. I'd have been like, kids, get your junk. Get in the car. We're going to sit at Starbucks until dad gets off of work or something. Like, we're out of here, you know. But she's like genuinely like, this is cool, you know.
Yeah. And I think she's kind of like the free spirit of the family.
She's definitely, yeah.
I think that's how you would have to look at it. She's kind of the free spirit, and then also just the... You know, they have to stay at the house somehow. So they have to explain it somehow.
I guess.
So her reaction, if it was just like, oh, we got to get out of here, you know, then you don't have a movie.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. I think I've maybe just outed myself as not being the free spirit in our house.
No.
Because that is not how I would have reacted.
Yeah.
I'd have been like, get the guns, get in the car, just make sure you have shoes on, we're gone. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and we've talked about this, I think, almost every episode, but like, you don't have a horror movie if they make good decisions.
But yes, exactly.
And so that false ending, like when you save your daughter, guess what? Guess what we're doing? We save our daughter, you know, that moment you catch him, you know, like from the ceiling and she's like covered in goo or whatever it is.
Pink goo.
We're getting in that car and we're driving away. Like, we're never coming back to this house.
We're out. Yeah.
But that's not the decision they make. They use this as like the way they explain it is the medium lady says, this house is clean.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing else here. Like, basically there's no more spirits here. We have exorcised
the demons.
Yeah.
Is that a Dana Carvey thing? I don't remember where I know that from.
A little bit a church lady-ish there.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's one of my questions is just Diane's response to what's going on in her house before things get dark and creepy and her kids are missing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really? You're that excited about this stuff? I don't know. Her facial expressions kind of take me out of it because she has this almost like childlike wonder look on her face. And mm-hmm. I think my gut reaction to things that I'm not happy about or things that are not on my agenda for the day is anger.
Yeah.
I don't have this like, you know, just bright-eyed, in awe expression on my face. Like she had a lot of the times. Uh-huh. And for me, just because that's not how I relate to the world, that kind of took me out of it a little bit here and there.
Right.
But it does work for her character. Yeah. So again, just questions I have. The other thing that really annoyed me, I just want to go back into the movie and punch this guy in the face, is the pool guy. They have that pool crew there digging a pool in their backyard. And her windows are open because I'm assuming it's beautiful California weather.
Yeah.
And he just reaches into her kitchen and like takes a taste of the sauce she's making on the stove, makes himself a cup of coffee. He's literally like, he's a skeevy guy working for the pool company. Yeah,
hitting on her daughter later.
Yeah, hits on the teenage daughter later on in the movie. And he just reaches in and helps himself to whatever's in the kitchen. Yeah. Oh, that got under my skin. I can't stay out of my space. I can't handle that.
Yeah.
And then the mosquitoes. I mentioned the mosquitoes earlier.
Yeah.
I just wanted there to be another like tie back to that or something. Like it felt so almost like it was an Easter egg that never resolved or something. Yeah. You know, like they mustered up the courage to go to the neighbors and say, hey, we've got some weird junk going on in our house. Do y'all have weird junk going on in your house too? And they're standing out there swatting all these mosquitoes, so much so that when they go back to their house, they have to put like calamine lotion all over their bodies because they're itching, so bad, they have mosquito bites. But the neighbors were not affected by the mosquitoes at all. And I'm like, but why? Like, is there an explanation for that?
Yeah.
Does the annoying neighbor eat too much garlic and mosquitoes don't like him? Like, what?
Yeah. Well, this happens in real life.
What's the deal?
There's this girl at work. It's the same thing. She says mosquitoes are attracted to her. Mm-hmm. And like, we did like a group lunch, like, you know, 10, 12 of us all. And mosquitoes were all eating her legs, like going onto her.
Right.
So I think that does kind of happen in real life. But I think more importantly for this film, it was showing though that You know, these neighbors don't want to help them out at all.
That's true. Those neighbors were not going to lift a finger for them.
And then that proves out in the final act.
Yeah, that's
the
true.
The neighbors come over like, what the heck's going on? And they're basically begging the neighbors to go in and help them.
Yeah.
And they just stand there. I don't know if they're just dumbfounded or if they're like, you know, screw you. I'm not helping you. Yeah. Or if they're just like, I don't know how to react to this.
Yeah, those neighbors were useless. They were not good neighbors.
Yeah.
They were not State Farm neighbors.
You almost could cut out the neighbors altogether, really.
You really could, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, if we're going to talk about low points, there is like the goofiest cut ever.
Oh, yeah. It's so choppy.
It really threw us off, you know, when the kitchen scene, which is one of my favorite scenes.
Right.
But when she goes on to explain, you know, like what had happened throughout the day, and the dad is just trying to process, what the heck am I watching?
Yeah, he right looks now? Completely dumbfounded. Like, what?
They do this goofy edit when, like, she's like mid sentence and it just cuts, and boom, they're in front of the neighbor.
Yeah.
Talking. And you and I, like, stopped the movie and rewound it and was like, what's going on here?
Well, and we were watching this, what, free on Tubi or something?
Yeah, it's free
so
on Tubi.
I think you thought like there was a glitch in the system, right?
Yeah.
Like that must have, you said like that must have been a mistake or something to rewind, play it again. And no, it happens every time. Like
yeah.
there really is a bad edit right there.
Right, right. All right. Well, very good. I think we're at that point now where we can say if we recommend this movie or not. So what say ye, Kim? Yay or nay?
Okay, this is one of my qualified statements.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I'm going to give it a yay because I can see how influential this movie has been in movies and shows that have come after it in the horror genre, right?
Yeah.
Like, it clearly has had a lasting impact on mm-hmm. future, or, yeah, shows that came after it. Is it my style, my love language, my entertainment genre that I want to mm-hmm. sit down and like, oh, let me just watch Poltergeist for fun. Nope, that's not
it's
me.
Not a go-to.
It's not a go-to for me. But I can see the value in it. And I do enjoy the fact that now I know why I know the phrase, they're here.
Yeah.
This is why, because this movie, you know, has left such a mark on everyone.
So you love and respect the cultural importance that this movie has.
Yes. Is it Michelangelo's Pietà? When you say cultural importance,
yeah.
I have like a little tick in me that's like, oh, is that the right word?
How about pop cultural
okay, importance? Okay, pop cultural importance. Yes, I can respect that. And I like that I'm in the know now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, no, I get it. I get it. It's obviously a yay for me. I really enjoyed this film. And it's something that I could see us watching, you know, around Halloween each year. Maybe not with the youngest, but, you know, at least with our daughter. She watched it with us and really liked it. We'll hear from her in a second here. Mm-hmm. So for me, you get the Spielberg-esque vibe, the look, the feel, but then you get it mixed with horror.
Yeah.
And it takes it to a different place. It's not just sci-fi. It's not these epic adventure movies, but he's going pretty much straight horror. But it's still Spielberg family-friendly horror. I think it's a unique kind of film, a unique feel, and I enjoy it. So a yay for me. All right, and actually, our daughter's here, and she would like to give her input. So what do you say, Nyla? Yay or nay to this film?
Yay, definitely.
And why is it a yay?
Because I really like the way it was filmed, and I think the surprise ending was a definite yes. And I feel like all of the actors were just amazing.
Yeah. And it wasn't too scary?
No, I didn't think it was very scary.
So what do you think? Should this be an annual tradition to watch this film, especially around Halloween?
Definitely.
Something we occasionally hit on when we discuss our films are their Rotten Tomatoes scores. And Poltergeist is one of those that gets a high score.
Okay.
From the critics, it's an 87%, pretty high up there.
Yeah.
And then the audience score is 79%.
Okay.
Which, I mean, everybody seems to know Poltergeist. I kind of expected that number to be a little higher from the audience, but
yeah, it is what it is.
That's still a pretty decent score from Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so we did get some comments on Instagram that I'll read aloud.
Okay.
So, Beepo Jones said, I'm in my 40s, and the terror creepiness still gets me when I watch this film. It's 80s, and no one will ever make a movie like this again. Heather O'Rourke, God rest her soul, will live forever with this iconic film.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. The film theorist said, maybe the scariest PG horror film ever made. There was no PG-13 until 1984. Spielberg knocked it out of the park. Director Toby Hooper helped. There's debate who actually directed this film. I say both did. Scary as heck.
Yeah, that's something we were going to hit on, and we didn't really. Apparently, PG-13 didn't exist.
Right.
So this got a PG rating because Spielberg probably had some sway in the industry, yeah, I'm assuming.
Yeah, him, or the you know, it was a big budget film, so maybe the studio, you know, called in some favors. Who knows?
I definitely don't see it as a PG movie. Like, yeah. Only our daughter watched it with us because she can stomach these sort of things. She's 14. Our oldest son, not interested. He doesn't want to watch it. He's very, like, he limits. He's very visually overstimulated by horror and whatnot. So he's not interested in watching it. And then, of course, our 10-year-old. It doesn't matter that it's rated PG. He will not be watching this for some time.
No.
He already sleeps in our room too much. He's not watching this for a while.
No. All right, and then Chris Noel says, this movie was the most impacting film about the supernatural as far back as I can remember.
Mm.
I loved to hate this.
I'm with you, Chrissy.
I would watch it with hunched head over in my eye, I'm sorry, in my hands and peek out between my fingers, only to freak out for 2 weeks after. It was a different freak out from the normal serial killer thriller. It was more sinister, and then I left the room for possibilities in the spiritual unknown realm. I slept with my huge cross pretty much my whole youth, because vampires, and also poltergeists. I'm sorry. It sounds like nighttime wasn't a fun time for you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, watching it with 43-year-old eyes for the first time, it was a very different experience than if I'd watched this as a younger Kim.
And then Journey Corndog says, this is definitely one of our favorites. We usually watch it every fall. The fact they used real skeletons in the pool scene is truly unsettling.
Yeah, that is unsettling. Why? Mm-hmm. Just how and why? I need more of the backstory on that. Where did they get these skeletons from?
Yeah, well, there's probably a YouTube video about it.
I'm sure.
So what are we watching next week?
Okay, we are sticking with this 1982 theme.
Woo-hoo.
I don't know if it's because it's 2022 and 1982 feels good and nostalgic. I don't know, but we're sticking with it.
Sure.
So in 1982, the Beastmaster came out, which I grew up watching this with my dad a lot. So this is going to be fun. I think you and I both have seen this movie quite a few times.
Yeah.
Together and apart.
And we're due for a good sword and sandal fantasy film.
Exactly. This is a good PG sword and sorcery fantasy.
Uh-huh.
IMDb says it's about a young man's search for revenge. Armed with supernatural powers, the handsome hero and his animal allies wage war against marauding forces.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got like his little, what were those little animals there?
They're Podo like ferrets or something?
Yeah.
What are they ferrets?
Yeah, something like that.
It's been a while. I need a refresher watch of this for sure.
And it's on Amazon Prime for free?
Yeah, and I think if you have Apple TV, it's rentable there too. So
cool. So watch it and come back and listen to us next week and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, we'll talk about it next week. Enjoy your movies, guys.
All right, have a great week.
Peace out.
Peace out.